This is Radio Boston. I'm Walter Wuthman in Studio 2. And Tisiana Deering is at our Statehouse Bureau today, where she's sitting down with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey. There's a lot to talk about, from budget negotiations on Beacon Hill to an uncertain future for the failing private hospital chain Steward Healthcare and its patients. It's also Earth Week, and climate is a top priority for her administration. So let's dive right into it. Tisiana, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Walt. And I'm here in the State House with Governor Maura Healey. Welcome back, Governor.
Good morning. It's nice to have you in the State House.
Thanks. I was going to say, it's a little weird for me to welcome you when we're here, isn't it?
Welcome to the State House, the People's House.
Thank you. It's great. It's great to be back here. There's a lot on budget that we want to talk about. I'm excited to talk about that. But there's also a ton happening in the news over the last couple of days. We're excited to have a chance to talk with you about that as well. Let's start there. And we'll start with Climate Week, Earth Day. Yesterday, the Catholic girl in me cannot resist this one because you have been invited to the Vatican. I will never meet Pope Francis, but you are going next week. It's a Vatican climate summit. Excuse me, I'm going to clear my voice. Your subject is governing in the age of climate change. Mary Wu was on yesterday. She's going to. Here's what she told us when I asked her what she's going to talk about.
We are.
Well, we don't have that sound. I'm just going to move on by it.
One of the most vulnerable regions of the world in New England when it comes to how quickly flooding and the changing weather patterns are going to affect our community. We feel the increasing heat already year by year by year. And we've also harnessed a lot of the collaborative spirit and resources in this area to implement things.
You're going to talk to the globe. You're going to talk to the world. What are you going to tell them?
Well, I'm really excited to have this opportunity. It's a really significant convening that the Pope is undertaking. As you know, years ago, he issued an important proclamation about climate and what was happening. He continues to promote this as a major issue. So this is an opportunity for me to join with other leaders from around the world to talk about what's happening with climate and, importantly, the things that we need to do and can do. I'm going to be talking about the Massachusetts experience. Our leadership as a state, as folks know, I'm the first governor to appoint a climate chief in our cabinet who sits atop and ensures that we have a climate-focused agenda in terms of mitigation measures, in terms of resiliency planning, in terms of investments and strategies across all realms, transportation, housing, healthcare, and the like. We're going to talk about some of the things that we've done in Massachusetts, what we need to do. The mayor, I am really looking forward to the opportunity to travel with the mayor as well. She mentioned some of the things that overlapped and intersect with what we're going to be talking about. Also, Tiziana, I have announced that I want to make Massachusetts the global hub for climate innovation, for climate technology. In fact, it's a big part of our economic development bill. We sit here in Massachusetts really at the crux of so much investment. We're number one in venture capital per capita. Research and development in the space of technologies that are going to help us decarbonize transportation, manufacturing, housing. We have so many labs here that we're looking to expand into fabrication facilities that are going to help us create the kinds of batteries, the kinds of storage, for example, that are going to power us forward away from fossil fuels. And so this is some of what I expect to talk about as well. So I'm really excited by
who
this opportunity.
This is, right? Like, I mean, you're looking at Global Hub. This is a global gathering, and there is draw. Who could be there that you might get to talk to or attract or sort of pull into the gravitational sphere of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? Do you have like a checklist that you're targeting or people whose attention you're trying to get that if you weren't there, you might not get
otherwise?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's an important part of this because it is going to be a convening of the very best in terms of the best thinkers, the best scientists, those who are making significant investments. And so to have the opportunity to talk with them about a Massachusetts experiment and experience and vision, bring them to Massachusetts where we can deploy, as I say, when I talk about us being a global hub of climate technology and innovation, to lead us through and forward in this time. I'm talking about bringing to Massachusetts the very best powers that be across realms, right here in our state, so that we can show leadership and how this can be done. So it's I expect it to be a really constructive few days at the Vatican.
And if it's a success, we might see delegations, for example, coming out of it that would visit the state.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to show off and promote what's happening here in Massachusetts. I mean, people may not realize this. Do you know that we were the first state, long before we were a state, we were the first place in America that produced steel, 1640 in Saugus, Massachusetts.
I admit that I did not know
right.
that.
People think it's Pittsburgh. No, Massachusetts made steel first. Today,
take that, Pittsburgh.
Today, Massachusetts is making green steel. We're making green cement. Examples of the kind of important and innovative technology related to climate that I think we can really build upon here. And you know, in a way, look at how we created life sciences. Look at how Massachusetts became the global hub for life sciences. It started with a significant investment from the state, and it brought together this amazing ecosystem of research and colleges and universities and teaching hospitals. And from there spawned so many entrepreneurs and founders in life sciences. The same thing can happen, is happening right here in Massachusetts. We just need to show that off. We also need to make that investment. And, you know, Rome will be a chance to do that. There'll be many. In fact, when I leave this conversation, I'm going to be going to meet with a number of corporate leaders to talk about climate and some of what they're doing and how we can all partner together on this. So it's exciting.
All right, pivoting to something else that's been in the news, Secretary of Transportation Monica Tibbetts Nutt set off some controversy after giving a speech at Walk Massachusetts. Commonwealth Beacon first reported on some of her remarks. She was talking about the work of the Transportation Finance Task Force and said they'd consider, and she wants them to consider, tolls at the New Hampshire border. At issue wasn't just the policy concept, but also the way she spoke about sort of an overall philosophy for getting funding for transportation priorities, where she repeatedly emphasized being aggressive. Listen, you have already released a statement saying in part, quote, "The Secretary's comments do not represent the views of this administration, and to be clear, I am not proposing tolls at any border," end quote, and you express support for her. So those parts are addressed. So I have two remaining questions. First, Tibbetts Nutt in that speech celebrated the open mandate of the task force. Here she is.
And this funding task force is different than the other commissions, the other task force and the committees. This one's actually different because we're not censoring this.
So then we have this kerfuffle. You come out, you clarify the position on the tolls. Blank slate's important for brainstorming. Are we now in a situation where you've commented, does it create a chilling effect? And are there other boundaries or parameters you have to create or are creating to take things off the table for that task force?
Well, I've said from the outset that I'm focused on making Massachusetts more affordable and more competitive. And that applies to transportation as well. You know, the reason I convened that task force and I asked for recommendations by the end of the year is because I know that we've got an issue with how we think about creating the best public transit system that we can possibly have. So I'm going to leave it to the experts that I appointed to that task force. They'll meet over a series of months and, you know, we'll see what they come forward with in terms of recommendations. And remember, it's a really diverse stakeholder group because, again, you want to have the best information, the best ideas. So that will be separate. I'm clear, though, Tiziana, where I am right now, and that is to say, you know, I am focused on affordability. I am focused on competitiveness. I'm not putting tolls at the border. I am focused on working with the team and the secretary on ensuring that we are doing what we need to do so that we improve our transit system. You see that at work at the T, which, you know, we could talk about. I know it continues to be a frustration, but you know what? We're working through it. We're working through those slow zones, you know, and GMing is on it. Similarly, I'm proud of the fact that we were able to secure significant federal funding recently. Look at the Alston Modal Project, right? The I-90 project there.
We got $300 million in from the federal government.
Exactly. You know, important investments that we're going to be making in roads, in bridges. We got money for Cape Cod bridges. I hope we get the final slug to be able to do what I want to do in terms of rebuilding the Cape Cod bridges. So, you know, that's the work that we're focused on, and we're going to keep laser focused on in the months ahead.
So you said you're focused on working with the team. That actually leads to the other follow question on this, Governor Healey. So Tibbetts Nutt also said this.
The beauty of a microphone and all these different places, especially when it's being recorded, once I say it, it's there. You gotta have to deal with it. And anyone that works there, I can see people in here. It's just like, you know that. Like, I will 100% use that as a weapon. Because once I say it, it is now a policy.
And if that wasn't clear, I will 100% use that as a weapon. It is now a policy. And she said that after noting that you like a good fight. You have the backs of your cabinet members. And you've said afterward you have her back. Is this a philosophy that you want your cabinet members to have? And if it's not, how would you characterize the approach that you want your team to take?
Look, I think people who know me know how I operate. And, you know, I have already spoken to the secretary about that. That was a very poor choice of words. It's not how we do things. It's not how we operate. And we've moved on from that, okay? What is important for folks to know is at the end of the day, as governor, for better or worse, I'm going to make the policy in consultation with my team and make the recommendations to the legislature, right? So, you know, we'll do that in a collaborative way. You know, in my view, you know, in leadership in these public jobs, your job is to listen. Your job is to convene. One of the things we really promote in our administration, our team, is bringing multiple voices, diverse voices to the table, and, you know, being willing to have conversations about what really is the best solution. See, we're in the business of solving problems. That's what the charge is for us to do day in and day out. How do you solve problems? How do you make life better for our residents, for folks here in the state? And it's that spirit of collaboration, communication, transparency, openness that's really important, and, you know, respect for those who we serve.
So one more question on sort of current affairs that I'm so interested in getting your take on, and it's a hard question, and I know that, and I'm just going to give context for listeners. Bring in the international home. You know that police in New York arrested more than 100 people late last week after Columbia University called them in to respond to a protest encampment that was set up there decrying Israel's war with Hamas in Gaza. In the last few days, universities here have taken a whole variety of approaches in response. I'm going to look at two right up the street from each other. So Harvard closes Harvard Yard to anyone without a university ID to avoid a similar situation. They've got signs posted in the yard warned of a disciplinary measure on students who bring in tents or other structures. MIT goes the other way. There's an encampment now set up over the weekend. In fact, the Boston Globe is reporting that some Harvard students have joined it. Many Jewish students at universities that do have encampments say that they create an unsafe environment. You've got at the heart this set of competing claims, right? You've got the right to speech and protest that students want on the one hand, and you have students on the other hand who want the right to feel safe. You know, you're a governor in the state where all these students live. There are dozens of universities grappling with this. It's hard. How are you thinking about it?
Well, I think you need to protect students on campus. You need to protect the safety and well-being of students. Unfortunately, we've seen a rise in anti-Semitism, a rise in Islamophobia, a rise in anti-Muslim, anti-Arab sentiment. And so, you know, I think for me, it's really important that we stay focused on combating hate, combating racism, and protecting people, making sure that we respect the dignity and worth of everybody, making sure that people are safe on campus. You know, it's an incredibly troubling situation right now in the Middle East, and I've joined with others in calling for a ceasefire and calling for humanitarian aid to Gaza and calling for the release of hostages by Hamas. These things need to happen. These things need to happen. And here in the Commonwealth, we need to work together to ensure that we're doing all that we can to fight what has been a really troubling rise in hate and vitriol and the like, especially. You know, it's a civil rights lawyer in me. I mean, I was head of the Civil Rights Division, spent a lot of time working with groups, whether it was, you know, instances of anti-Semitism, whether it was Islamophobic and anti-Muslim attacks after the former president imposed the travel ban, right? So you got to make sure that people feel safe and know that their rights are protected here.
Is there a way to have room for both?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There has to be. And that's, you know, the we're a free country and people have the right to express their views and, you know, protest within the bounds of the law, of course, right? And that's, you know, where you see some of the tension and some of the problems arise there.
We're here at the State House with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey. I want to move into
where we have a number of protests. You can see protests every day here, Tiziana,
outside.
You stick around for the afternoon.
That's right. Can't hear them from inside, but
no.
We've talked to you while they're going on outside before. Lots of numbers, budget stuff to go to now. Negotiations underway for next year, but the legislature still hasn't finalized the supplemental budget that you want for this year. A key to that is funding for the state's emergency shelter system, which is the family shelter system. Over the last few weeks, at least a month, there have been warnings that that could run out of money. Excuse me. When is that going to happen? Do we know what day, if this doesn't get passed, the emergency shelter system runs out of money?
I mean, every day we're working on this. We're working on housing and dealing with the situation of immigrant arrivals. Look, I know the legislature is working very hard right now in considering a supplemental budget on this and funding. In the meantime, you know, we've identified sources that we can use to cover things. But you know, it just goes back to the need for Congress to act and for us to get funds to help us as a state. You know, there are just certain states that have had to bear the disproportionate burden of immigrant arrivals. And we really need help from the federal government, and Congress needs to act. And it's a shame that they didn't act 2 months ago when they had the opportunity to give us funding. But I call on Congress to act to get this done.
So two follows on that. First, it doesn't sound like you're worried we're going to hit a moment where we run out of money.
Oh, I'm always worried. I mean, this, look, as folks know, over the last several months, better part of a year, this has been a significant issue, and I have spoken with great urgency and intensity about the need for funding, certainly, you know, from the state, but it can't be all on the state, and that's where we're at. It's why months ago I imposed a cap, because in all honesty, we were full. You know, we lacked the capacity, the physical structures, the housing, and also the staffing service providers to be able to accommodate the numbers that we were seeing. So I've really tried to be transparent with the public. I've also said it's important that you know, public, that we are working to get people working. I'm proud of the fact that we have processed over 3,000 immigrants for work authorization. So they're here legally, lawfully, and now they have work authorization, and they're getting matched up with employment, which will get them out of state-supported housing. But don't get me wrong, I am constantly worried about money, both running out of money and also the money that we've already spent on this system and, you know, the competing needs of others across the Commonwealth.
So the other piece of follow on that, you talked about frustration that a couple of months ago when the legislature in Washington had
Congress.
An opportunity to act,
yep.
They didn't, right?
Right.
Over the last several days, it has been, I don't want to over-editorialize, but remarkable to watch Congress actually move on a package of legislation that seemed dead in the water, which was foreign aid. Does it make you think that there is a new possibility that other stuff that was dead in the water a couple of months ago might not be now? Do you now think that this is a Congress that might act on what you need them to act on? Or are we not holding our breaths in 2024?
Well, I'm going to continue to press for it. Am I holding my breath? No. And the reason is because the former president said there's no deal on immigration, no deal on the border until the election. Okay, so that stopped everybody in their tracks. And I'm not anticipating that it's going to be brought forward. Would I like it to be? Absolutely, because there are sensible things that Democrats and Republicans can agree need to happen when it comes to addressing our immigration system, fixing the border, and funding states like Massachusetts that have had to bear the cost of what is a federal problem, right? So I'll hope for it, but you know, I'm not holding my breath.
Is this what's animating your involvement in the national election?
No, I care. There's a lot of things that are animating my involvement in the election. I think the choice is clear, could not be more clear. As we speak about what is at stake, Joe Biden right now or shortly will be addressing an audience in Florida where they have a 6-week abortion ban, an abortion ban that Donald Trump will vote for and has supported. Donald Trump is responsible for the curtailment of abortion rights across this country to the detriment of hundreds of thousands, millions of American women. And that is just shameful. And, you know, I think that's going to be a major issue in the election. I think, of course, immigration is going to be an issue. But, you know, this could not be more clear. It's about democracy. It's about protecting certain freedoms. It's about upholding the rule of law. It's about protecting so many things that are important to me. Abortion access is really important to me. It's important to me that we address climate, that we continue to support education, that we support workers in this country. These are things that are really important to me. And there's a clear contrast between what Joe Biden represents and what Donald Trump represents. And that's why I've been speaking out. Because at the end of the day, if you come from Massachusetts, if you're Donald Trump and you're proud, you're bragging about overturning, and you're claiming responsibility for overturning Roe, you're coming after Massachusetts women. You're coming after Massachusetts healthcare providers and patients, including women who right now, as we speak, are traveling from other states to Massachusetts for needed care. So I speak out about that. When you're Donald Trump and you say you don't believe in wind, and here in Massachusetts, we've got the largest...
Wind energy.
We've got the
Not
large...
Not the wind.
We just... Yeah. We've got the largest offshore utility scale wind facility in North America. I've just made a proposal for more investments in climate technology. You're coming after Massachusetts jobs. You're coming after Massachusetts economic growth and development and important investments that have been made here. So darn right I'm going to speak up.
So in our remaining time, and we're in the State House with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey here on Radio Boston, one of the other things I want to make sure that we get to, you talked about healthcare in Massachusetts, couple of questions on Steward Health, really specific ones, just to remind everybody, we've been following this for months, many have, Steward's financial troubles, 9 hospitals here. So last week, the state started a series of private meetings with regional providers that are focused on discussing access and care for patients, not intended to inform about the potential acquisition of Steward facilities, anything like that. They're closed door, but what can you tell us so far about what's coming out of those?
Well, they've been really helpful. I mean, at the outset, I've said we are focused on protecting jobs, protecting patients, protecting the stability of the healthcare market. And the reason we're doing this regional convenings with providers is to make sure that we have properly accounted for and assessed needs. We're focused this week, for example, on labor and delivery services and on behavioral health services. So, you know, we benefit in Massachusetts from so many wonderful healthcare providers, hospitals, institutions, and this is really us saying we all got to work together here to work our way through this problem, which is something that was created by the selfishness and greed of Ralph Dellatore and Steward. And
CEO of Steward.
The one with a couple of yachts. Steward has been, really despicable in how they have conducted themselves here. Not the docs, not the nurses, not the people who work and even manage the Steward facilities, but the Steward leadership in Dallas, Texas, what they've done in terms of stripping all the assets and resources out of these facilities that are so imperative and important for providing care to the community. So we're going to continue with the regional meetings. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kate Walsh, is heading up that effort, and we're going to continue to do everything we can to protect the stability of the healthcare market and access to care for patients as well as jobs.
Okay, last question on this. There's increasing concern over this possible transaction where the doctors group gets purchased by Optum, which is owned by United Healthcare. Letter from 8 of our 9 congressional delegation members raising more concern, pushing back. With your old attorney general hat on, do you want to see that transaction go through? And if it doesn't, sort of, is that a crater, like a financial crater? What happens?
What needs to happen is the relevant regulatory agencies need to be able to do their job. That's the Health Policy Commission here in Massachusetts, and it's the U.S. Department of Justice, which is currently reviewing the matter. So I have faith in those processes and that they'll be able to do the look that they need to do, provided that Steward provides documents. You know, as wearing my former hat as Attorney General, they took me to court because they didn't want to provide documents, and we actually prevailed. Steward needs to come clean and provide the documents.
All right, so last question on budget. We're in a negotiation process now. The governor puts out a budget. The House has put out their budget. The Senate will, sometime this spring. Any message to the Senate, which hasn't put their budget out yet, that you want to communicate?
No, I don't send messages. I do file a budget, right, to start off the process, which we did earlier this year. I was really heartened in looking at what the House came forward with. There's a lot of alignment. I think there's a lot of alignment between what we as an administration are trying to do and what the House and the Senate are trying to do. You know, important investments in housing and in childcare and transportation, right? I think there's a lot of alignment, shared recognition of the problems and the needs facing communities and residents. So it's a process, and I look forward to, you know, working it through over the next several weeks and months.
All right, Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey.
Speaking of money, though, I want to say it's Earth Week. Every week's Earth Week here, but we just landed $160 million from the Biden administration for solar deployment around the state. Jobs, money,
sciences.
All good stuff. Another $5 million for the restoration of cranberry bogs. It's just to say, like, when I said I was going to chase federal dollars, we've brought back $3 billion to the state of Massachusetts. A lot of it, transportation, infrastructure, and importantly, investments related to climate change mitigation. So I just want people to feel good about that as we celebrate Earth Week here in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, thanks for letting us join you here in the State House. We'll
great.
See you next month.
Great to be with you.
Back over to you, Walt Wuthman.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Walter Wuthman, in for Tisiana Deering. And with us now for some analysis of Governor Healey's interview with Tisiana is Samantha Gross, politics reporter for the Boston Globe, who covers state government, and Boston Herald columnist Joe Battenfeld. Samantha, Joe, welcome to you both.
Thank you, Walt.
Thank you for having us.
Joe, we're sitting here in studio. I want to start with you. What is your first reaction to what you just heard?
Well, I think clearly the Secretary of Transportation is in the doghouse, judging by Governor Healey's remarks about the tolls that she brought up, you know, putting tolls at the border. That's not going to happen. But it's more than that. She also said that she does not speak for the administration, Monica Tibbetts Nutt, and that she used a very poor choice of words when having this arrogant attitude about taking money from people, raising taxes to pay for transportation. I think, you know, Governor Healey was wise to tamp that down. I'm not sure if your transportation secretary doesn't speak for your administration, what do you have a transportation secretary for? I think they have a serious problem there. But I'm glad to see Governor Healey to tamp that down.
I think I read, and you wrote a blistering column about this,
yeah.
But there are some proposals from the secretary's speech that you actually agree with.
Yeah, I mean, I think she made a point about aggressive driving on the state's roads and cracking down on that. The police really, anybody who's driven out there in Massachusetts on the highways or on the streets, the city, knows what a problem this is, and they need to get more aggressive with drivers, start taking away licenses more for, you know, aggressive driving and dangerous driving. And I think she made a good point there.
Can you think of other examples, you know, past administrations where a secretary has maybe gone out on a limb expressing a policy viewpoint and gotten blowback from the chief executive?
I think there have been cases in the past of cabinet secretaries doing that. And Governor Baker, I remember dealing with that a couple of times. But I haven't heard anything quite this outrageous from a cabinet secretary saying, if I say it, this is policy. And that arrogant attitude that is symptomatic, I think, of an attitude that the state of Massachusetts has towards its people.
Samantha, you cover the legislature very closely. You're in the state house nearly every day. I thought it was interesting that the governor said that she doesn't send messages to the legislature, but the state Senate will be unveiling their own budget proposal soon. What are you expecting to see in it? And what do you think the governor wants to see in it?
Yeah, I know that was kind of my main takeaway from that conversation is that she's not sending messages to the legislature, but this is, you know, a really interesting time to be watching the budget negotiations. You know, the House is going to be voting on their budget that varies, you know, pretty dramatically from the governor's proposal in a few main areas. And yeah, we're waiting to see kind of what the Senate comes out with. So I think, you know, those gaps in between what the House has and what the governor has are things I'm going to be watching really closely to see kind of what comes out of the House vote this week. Are we expected to happen this week? And then, yeah, what the Senate ends up putting out on some key issues like how to fund, you know, the T and some various programs that the governor has really prioritized and, you know, how to fund some really expensive programs that have only become, you know, bigger problems such as the emergency assistance shelter program, which, you know, the governor spoke about with Tiziana.
Yeah. And, you know, while next year's budget is being negotiated, there's also this supplemental budget that is being worked out behind closed doors, you know, to cover the bills for the emergency shelter system this year. The governor was not clear about when the system might actually run out of money. And this is a big question, even amongst the negotiators. So what are you hearing about how those conversations are going?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard dates kind of all across the board from people who, you know, are doing the negotiations, you know, leadership, but also, you know, kind of advocates who are seeing, you know, the cost of this system start to, you know, continue to balloon. I know that the Healey administration says that the total cost over, you know, this current fiscal year and the next, you know, could soar to over $1 billion. So I think, you know, the money's certainly dwindling. I know that supplemental budget is sitting in limbo, and that the governor, you know, proposed draining the state surplus account to pay for this, which I think is just a sign that, you know, it's a desperate need for cash right now.
Joe, you've been a real critic of how the system is operated. In the supplemental budget, there is some policy proposals to limit the amount of time families can stay in shelter to 9 months with certain exceptions, you know, based on a House proposal and a Senate proposal. But I'm wondering what you think of those policy ideas and what you think might come out of these negotiations.
Well, they clearly need to do something to rein in these costs because they can't continue to sustain these, you know, over a billion dollars a year in shelter costs. We're going to run out of money probably by the end of the month for the shelter system. And they still have yet to, and the House only appropriated $500 million for the shelter system, which is not nearly enough. And I think they're way undervaluing it, how much it's going to cost. And I think, you know, when it comes to the budget, really, I think they need to look within, not at, I know the legislature is going to be tempted to go for higher taxes to pay for some of this stuff, but they really need to look within. I mean, there's plenty of bureaucracy in the state that could be cut. Look at the UMass system. That bloated bureaucracy has been going on for years and years. No governor has it under control. Why don't you start looking there first for some savings? Because you know, higher taxes is not the answer. It's going to be just another nail in the coffin of the state if they do that.
Samantha, something that the governor has pointed to as a way to move people through the system is getting work authorizations. And she told Tiziana there's now over 3,000 people who have been approved to work. Can you talk about why that is so important and also why it's so hard for new immigrants to get those work authorizations?
Yeah, there's a lot of bureaucracy that comes with, you know, applying for a work authorization. You know, there's only certain classes of people that can do that. It depends on kind of your situation and how you entered the U.S. The other thing that I'll add about work authorizations is that once you do have a work authorization, it's still really difficult for a lot of these migrants to get jobs because of language barriers, because of transportation barriers. There's, you know, it's a bigger hurdle than it seems. So just because a few thousand people are getting work authorizations, it doesn't necessarily translate into jobs. And the other thing I'll add about that is, you know, it's really expensive to live in Massachusetts. You know, that's not really up for debate. And I think it's going to take a lot more than kind of some of these entry-level jobs to get people out of shelter. So from the advocates I spoke to, you know, work authorizations are a great step. It leads people to independence. It allows people to kind of start to rely on the state less for resources, but it isn't the golden ticket to, you know, moving people out of shelter, at least at the pace that they're going to need to in order to keep up with the demand and the growing wait lists and, you know, the growing costs associated with it.
And before we wrap up here, Joe, briefly, the governor gave a little bit of indication about these private meetings with Steward Healthcare. What is the big question for you as we watch that system continue to crater?
I mean, I think the state really needs to be proactive on this and looking at it instead of just trying to score political points and talking about Ralph Dellatore's yachts for the, you know, which that ship has sailed. And we don't really, you know, that's not going to provide any answers for all these struggling community hospitals. We need to save these community hospitals. They're so important to the economy and to these local communities that depend on them. So we need to look proactively at saving them.
That is Boston Herald columnist Joe Battenfeld, and we were also with Samantha Gross, politics reporter for the Boston Globe, who covers state government. Samantha, Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.